Readers Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Hello, and welcome to Readers Entertainment Radio. I'm your host, Sheila English, and we have a very interesting and provocative guest with us tonight. His book, Breath of God, takes a look at religions of the East and the teachings of Jesus in a very unique way, while taking us through a journey of mystery and mysticism. Please welcome author Jeffrey Small. Welcome.
Well, Sheila, it's great to be on with you today.
Now, tell me, I know this has nothing to do with the book, but I have to ask, what kind of weather are you guys getting there? You're in New York?
I'm in New York today. I'm actually from Atlanta.
Okay.
So it's a little bit cooler. It was triple digits when I left Atlanta yesterday, and it's a little overcast here in New York City today.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure you weren't having perfect weather, because I'm stuck here in Kentucky. I'm right between New York and Atlanta, and it's muggy and icky. And
that pretty much sums up the way Atlanta's been these last few weeks.
Now, before we get too far, I just want to let our listeners know that the live chat session is up, and you can join us there. You can call into the show, 646-200-4071, if you have some questions or just want to kind of join the talk. After the show, you can download the podcast, or you can come over to readersentertainment.com and check out the blog that will accompany the podcast. Anything that we talk about, the websites and where you can find the book and all of that information will be on readersentertainment.com. So, if you didn't get to jot it down fast enough, you don't have to worry about it. We're going to make sure that we get all of that to you. It should be up by tomorrow morning. Now, Jeffrey, why don't we start out with having you tell us about the story? What is Breath of God about?
Sure. The Breath of God is what I call a mystical mystery. The story is about graduate student Grant Matthews, who journeys to the Himalayas in search of an ancient legend that his academic colleagues believe is a mere myth. Well, once he's over traveling through India and Bhutan, he encounters a conspiracy of zealots who will go to any lengths to prevent him from taking this mystery and making it public. So he becomes involved in this race to expose the truth that could really change the way we view religion today. But then he also realizes that these ancient mystical teachings that he confronts over there has the power to transform his own life if he survives the ordeal. So it's the novel is set really back and forth between some different exotic locales. We've got these dramatic Himalayan landscapes in Bhutan, which is a tiny Buddhist kingdom nestled between India, Nepal, and China. You've got the exotic land of India itself, where we've got a murder at the Taj Mahal and a kidnapping along the banks of a sacred Ganges River. And then we have, for some people, the equally exotic American South, where I'm from. And where my protagonist, Grant Matthews, is in school, and so we have some scenes in the good old American South as well. So it's really, it's a journey of kind of these ancient, hidden, mystical teachings and cover-ups, and also the dangers of religious fanaticism as well.
So at the end of the day, this is a thriller.
It is. It's a suspense novel. It's a thriller. Some of the reviewers are starting to compare it to kind of a Dan Brown-esque type of a novel, but I think as some of the readers are getting into it, while it is a suspense novel and it's a thriller, it has this sense of the mystical and the spiritual as well. There are certain religious themes that are in it, but it's not a religious book. It's not, for any particular, religious, philosophy or ideas. But you do have these different themes among the Eastern and Western religions that go through it. And so it really depends on the reader. I get different readers take different things. Some just are enjoying it for just, hey, this is a fun beach read story, the excitement of turning the page to see who may die next or what the latest mystery is. To those that really get into some of these ancient teachings and how might they apply them to their own lives.
Why religion and suspense? What is it about religion that seems to lend itself to a thriller?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's for a couple of things. One, you know, religion kind of gets to the heart of the ultimate meanings of existence, of why we're here. And when we think of this word, the mystical, it's actually the same Greek root that mystery comes from. And that's really what it means. It's about what is hidden, what is beyond our everyday existence. You know, we go around our daily lives, we go to our jobs, we deal with our families, we provide, we cook, we exercise, you know, we do all those things, but there's also this sense that, that many people have that there's something more about life, there's something deeper beyond this everyday existence. And as we start delving into what are these mysteries that are beyond the everyday, it's such a rich area for fiction, that in fiction it allows us to ask that wonderful question of, well, what if this happened? What about this? That seems to me to go hand in hand with some of the same religious questioning that many of us do as well.
So, you know, I totally agree. You know, I was thinking about this question earlier today, and it's, you know, it's, I think with religion, because there's a lot of, like you said, the mysticism to it, that paranormal aspect of it, you know, according to what religion that you're talking about, you know, it does kind of go hand in hand with, you know, suspense, which is, you know, the unknown. You have these
exactly.
two unknown elements that can complement each other and heighten your sense of awareness. You know,
it raises it also in fiction too. It's a lot about is what's at stake here. And when we talk about, you know, in some kind of political thrillers, you know, what may be at stake is a war or a terrorist attack in our capital or something. With a religious kind of themed thriller, you know, what can be at stake can be ultimate meaning of, you know, what is our purpose? How do we find happiness? How do we find joy? You know, what is meaning about? So it helps to kind of raise those stakes that are so important in fiction as well, and keep that reader engaged in what's going on. And so I've had a lot of fun doing that, exploring some of these great themes throughout the novel.
Well, and I really love too, you know, when you mix those two things, you have the internal, the how people feel about their religion, and then you have that external, the practices of that religion, or how people sometimes will manipulate religion to manipulate people. So you have that really intrinsic, sense about your religious beliefs and what that can drive a person to do. And I think
exactly. And that's what you touched on here is one of the main themes that goes throughout The Breath of God is that play about what is religion, you know, what the positive, the danger, you know, with how it can be misused as well. And so there's a couple of debates that go on in the novel. There is a question of, you know, what really is religion? Is it just doctrine? Is it words in a sacred text? Is it teachings from a sacred teacher? Or is it something more personal about one's own experience of that which is greater than we are? And at the same time, there is this struggle between, on the one hand, my main character, who's on this journey that becomes kind of a mind-opening journey as he travels to the East and explores these other traditions. On the other hand, you've got several characters that put forth some of the dangers of fundamentalism, of what happens, you know, when we're so set in our beliefs and we're afraid that anything that may challenge that has to be suppressed to the point of killing. And if we look through our history of, you know, as a civilization, we see how many wars have been fought in the name of religion. And it's almost ironic that, you know, we seem to kill each other over the debate over whose God is the most loving.
Right.
And the intolerance and the heartache that religion can bring on the same hand that it's supposed to be bringing peace and compassion and love. So that tension is within the central themes in novel The Breath of God also.
It sounds like you've really done a lot of research on this. What kind of research have you done for this book?
Yeah, it's I'm kind of an academic at heart. I've got degrees from Harvard, Yale, and Oxford universities. My degree from Oxford is a master's in the study of world religions. So as the initial background research for The Breath of God, I read about 50 nonfiction books really kind of delved into some of these fascinating religions of the East, into Buddhism, into Hinduism. And we see so much in our society today where I think it's fascinating how many churches have yoga classes, for example, or where we're seeing meditation techniques that are being used in psychotherapy practices, also in contemplative prayer in churches. So there's this blending of the lines of East and West that I wanted to explore in the novel. So I started off with a lot of background research into some of these different practices. And then the favorite part of it was my own journey to the Himalayas. So I trekked through India and through Bhutan, following the same path that Grant Matthews does, my protagonist, throughout the novel. And so, part of what I've tried to do is to really capture the sights and the sounds and especially some of the exotic smells of these different lands. They're so rich for description that, when you go to the Taj Mahal, many of us have seen pictures of it, but it's a different experience just to see the majesty in a country that outside the walls, there's the most abject poverty that you've ever seen. I mean, just heartbreaking stuff. And I've had the fortune to travel to South America. I've been through Africa. But there's nothing like the depth of poverty that you can find in India. But then you step inside the walls of the Taj Mahal, and here is this magnificent, wonder of this translucent white marble, and then up, it goes about 100 feet in the air, inlaid within the marble, semi-precious jewels that wind up in flowers and vines, and then even script from the Quran. It kind of takes your mind away, and so your breath away. And so to be able to have these fun locations to then set a chase scene in and then bring in some of the historical meaning behind the locations, it becomes kind of a suspenseful travelogue in a way through some of these places that readers may not have had a chance to visit. And then from India, you jump to a completely different world when you get to Bhutan, which is a fascinating little country because it's in the foothills of the Himalayas. It's a tiny Buddhist kingdom dotted with these Buddhist monasteries. Many of the young men in the country grow up in monasteries. And if you're not a Buddhist monk, then you're a rural laborer. You work in some of the farms in these picturesque valleys of crops of beans and with the snow-capped Himalayas around you. So it's almost like stepping back in time to a simpler age, two centuries ago when you visit Bhutan. And the government does a great job there about limiting tourism. The number of people that can come into the country is limited to maintain that kind of bucolic setting. And they have a great setting saying in Bhutan. They say that we don't measure progress here by gross national product like you do in the West. We measure gross national happiness. So I thought that was kind of a fun way of doing it. And so, yeah, exactly. So to take the reader on a journey to these exotic locales where we also dip our toes into some of the philosophical and religious traditions in there, and then contrast that then when we jump back and forth between the American South and our own kind of religious traditions and cultures here, it gives kind of a fun contrast for the reader to go back and forth between those places. And for me, being someone from the American South, to have my own kind of journey to all the different places that the novel is set in was just a great experience.
Now, did you get a lot of pictures when you were there?
I did. And one of the fun things a lot of my readers are enjoying is on my website, which is simply jeffreysmall.com, I've got a page of the research pictures, and I've actually tied them to chapters in the book. So after you don't want to spoil it and look at the pictures first, but after you've read The Breath of God, you can go back and then kind of grade me and see how well of a job I've done describing the different scenes, because I have, of all the key locations, I've got pictures. So every scene in the novel is an actual place, whether it's a particular monastery or river, or famous monument where something takes place over in the East. I've got document pictures of it, and then it's kind of labeled by chapter as you go through this photo journey on my website.
I love that. I'm one of those people, I travel as well, but there are a lot of places, you can't go everywhere, and I definitely have not have not seen the Taj Mahal. I love to go and see pictures. So, but you're saying we should read the book first, and then we can head on over and find the pictures.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to. I don't want to give anything away by checking out the pictures first. Similarly, on the website, I've got a page for reading book clubs. And I've got probably 50 questions, and the same thing. You don't want to read those first because they give away some of the plot, but some of the fun twists and turns that happen in the novel.
Well, tell me something, you know, on your travels and your research. What did you personally learn along the way that surprised you?
You know, we see so often the differences among the major religions of the world, and they certainly on the surface look very different. When you go to India, for example, and even anyone who's if you've been just to an Indian restaurant in the United States, you know, immediately you look around the room and look at the walls, and what you'll see is you may see different paintings or wall hangings or statues of all these different deities. And the same thing when you travel through India, the first thing that hits you is how deeply spiritual this country is. In addition to having kind of temples everywhere, they even have these fun little, in certain cities, mobile temples that are basically kind of carts that were shrines to the different kind of local deities that they would move from street corner to street corner around the town during the day, and that you could go to one of these carts just during the day as you're walking along the street in your daily life and kind of worship there. And so that kind of that sense of the spirituality, that there isn't that separation of church and state and kind of our weekday lives, and then if you go to church or temple on a Saturday or Sunday, you know, that we so often see here in the United States, it was something just part of their spiritual life, was part of their daily life, which was interesting to me. But when you start seeing some of these differences, you know, gods with multiple heads or elephant heads and multiple arms, it seems kind of fantastical sounding to us, kind of coming from a Judeo-Christian environment here in the West. But then the more you start delving into the teachings and some of the philosophies of these religions, you see that a lot of those differences are more surface differences. And that in India, it's common for people to think of Hinduism as a polytheistic religion, meaning it's a belief in multiple gods, kind of like when we grew up and you learned about Greek mythology. And that's really a mischaracterization of their beliefs, and that they have this fun saying that says, there is one God, but many faces. And so in India, there's this concept that since God is infinite, you can't understand, the human finite mind can never really grasp God. We can only see God in pieces and understand different faces, different aspects of how God interacts with the world. And then that kind of therefore gives rise to these different, quote, deities. And so they might, you know, see a certain aspect of God and then picture that in a certain way. So again, on the surface, it looks so different from what we may see in the West, but then when you kind of delve deeper and you see that, hey, there really is this belief in a single kind of power beyond creation that's infinite and ultimately indescribable. And so that's part of kind of one of the themes in the novel is, without playing down the differences among the major religious traditions, really starting to look at, hey, what are some of the common teachings and some of the common practices that we find among these great traditions?
So tell me, that actually, just if we had more than 10 minutes left, I think we could probably have an entire conversation just about just going along the whole, the commonality of the religions and all the things that you've learned. But I want to come back to the book a little bit. I'm really interested because hearing you, you know, you always wonder when you meet an author, you talk to an author, you know, how close are they to, you know, being the same personality or having some of the same traits as their main character. And it just kind of makes me wonder, you know, about your main character. So tell me a little bit about him.
Yeah, so Grant Matthews is a graduate student, and he's working on his PhD thesis. And it revolves around this ancient legend that I mentioned. And I'll give just a little bit of a hint of the legend that he's trying to pursue over there. It's one of the great mysteries of the Bible. It revolves around the so-called missing years in the life of Jesus. And what a lot of people don't realize is how little information we have about the life of Jesus of Nazareth. His period in which his ministry, when he was teaching with his disciples, all the great parables, the stories that we've heard about him, is only about a year in his life when he's around 30 years of age. Prior to that, we've got a brief mention when he's 12 years old and he's in the temple in Jerusalem and he kind of amazes everybody about how well-spoken he is. But then we've got these two decades in which the Bible is absolutely silent about what was Jesus doing during those two decades. And that's what Grant Matthews is out to find out. And there is some fascinating research on this area, historical research that I've incorporated into the novel, that may be the reason we don't have writings about Jesus in his hometown in Galilee, Nazareth, is that maybe he's not there at all. You know, what if he connects with a merchant caravan that's traveling along the ancient spice route that would have traveled through India? You know, what if Jesus himself traveled along this route and then encountered some of these exotic and different teachings in the East that may have influenced him his own teachings? So there's this, some of this fascinating research that's kind of outside of normal scripture that Grant Matthews is trying to track down. So the novel is also based a lot in some of this historical research, and it gives us that what if question that we can ask in fiction of, you know, what if, you know, he really does, or my protagonist Grant Matthews come across and is able to unearth some of these ancient proofs of what Jesus was doing during that time, and how might that affect how we look at Christianity and how these different religions relate to each other, and who might be threatened, you know, what characters might not like that idea and want to suppress some of this truth. So it becomes this kind of mix of history and fiction at the same time, as well as this travelogue. But it also becomes a deeply personal search, too. Grant, who is like many of us, is kind of searching on his own path of what does his own life mean. And he's been brought up in a certain household. He's very much a historian, and he's kind of struggled with his own kind of spirituality. So it becomes kind of a search for meaning for him as well, as maybe you've kind of picked up from my conversation, it's been for me, my own kind of journey of, you know, my study of the different religious faiths of the world, my own journeys through the Himalayas, you know, and hopefully it'll become a fun journey for the reader as well. And it's not about indoctrinating anyone into any particular religious tradition at all, and that's not what happens to Grant through the novel. It becomes more of a questioning and an opening. You know, it's about opening his mind to greater possibilities, to something that's bigger than us, and asking what might that be and how do we find that and how do some of the teachings of these different traditions maybe lead us to the same place.
Now, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, things that, you know, things that you learned that surprised you, and I'm going to come back to that just now that I, you know, listening to you describe the character and all the things that he learned. Do you feel like writing this book and you know, a lot of people don't understand when you write a book, it's not especially a really good book, it's not often that you can just sit down and you just type out something from the top of your head and it ends up being some kind of bestseller. There actually is a lot of work that goes behind, you know, behind the scenes. You're writing the story, you're doing the research, you read 50 books, you actually travel to all of these places. Do you feel like you're now that journey is, you know, has come to this goal, the goal being you finished the novel and the novel, you know, is now open for other people to read. Do you feel like you're a different person from when you first started?
I definitely am a different person. One, I mean, there's just the whole challenge of any novel that you write. It is a work of blood, sweat, and tears to get it done. And I tell people of, you know, people sometimes get impressed with my academic credentials, but none of those are anything like writing and finishing a novel. That was definitely the most difficult thing that I've ever done. But for me, it was also the joy every day of sitting down and being creative. And even though, I mean, I've thrown away 300 pages of early drafts, completely rewritten characters. And I mean, and that's very painful to do. But just that journey of every day trying to do a little spark of creativity to come out. And then after a while, my characters became like real people to me. So Grant Matthews, my protagonist. I've got a great, very strong female lead, Kristen Misaki, who's a photojournalist who Grant meets along the way and becomes part of this journey. Grant and Kristen really became real to me, and it was kind of sad when I finished the novel. And it's fun because I'm getting emails every day from people around the country that are discovering it, saying, "When's the next book coming out? And are you going to use Grant and Kristen again? Because I really miss them, and I miss them too, because they do become it becomes real." And so for me, actually finishing it and seeing it published, it was almost anticlimactic because I got so much joy out of just the creative process of discovery. And so, and every day, I'm an outliner, so I had an extensive outline for the book. But even then, some of the themes would develop, and the stories of the characters would take on their own lives as I was writing it, and things would go apart from the outline. And then the more as I studied, and it really became kind of a spiritual process for me as well as it kind of is for my characters.
Now tell me, what kind of person do you think is reading the story? Who's loving the story?
Well, it's interesting. To stereotype a little bit, I get two very different reactions because I am blending genres here a little bit. I mean, it's a suspense novel, it's a mystery, a thriller, but it has this sense of the spiritual to it as well. And so the number of times I've had a conversation with husband and wife who have both read the book, and it's funny that I'll have two very different conversations. So when I talk to the husbands, and again, I'm stereotyping, but I've had this conversation several times. Uh-huh. They want to know, how did you come up with this way of killing off this character in this chapter? Or something that was really suspenseful that's like, that was really twisted here, and what gave you the idea? And I'll tell them that. Then when their wives talk to me, it's like you're talking about a different book. They want to talk about the spiritual journeys of my characters and these themes and, they're like, I do yoga and I recognize some things that, that you taught here that my yoga teacher was telling me that, and so it'll be very different kind of conversations with them. So it's, and that's fine for me. I mean, the novel, I hope people will discover it's more than kind of a standard suspense novel thriller. But I don't mind at all those that, I've got a lot of reviewers that are calling it a page turner and that kind of thing. And that's great because I meant for it to be like that. I did choose to write fiction and not a nonfiction book. And so I want the reader to be entertained. And I'm happy for those that don't care about delving deeply into the story and some of the symbolism and the themes. If they just want a fun beach read, go for it. There's a lot in there, but I really love that the emails that I get from people that are connecting on a deeper level with the book and some of these other themes that are there.
Well, I'll ask you what I'm certain everyone else is asking you when they're emailing you. What's next? What's next for you? What are you doing?
Great question. I'm working right now on the second book. It's not a sequel, so it's different characters, but it has some similar themes, but it blends psychology, science, and religion and kind of gets into brain research and kind of where do some of our religious beliefs come from. And but it's also a thriller, too. So it's got it's a fun book. And I've finished the first draft, and I'm editing it just as we speak.
Great. Now, we've got about 30 seconds. I want to make sure that everybody can find you wherever you're at. So can you let everybody know where they can find you online?
Great. You can go to my website, jeffreysmall.com, and it's Jeffrey Small, Small, and that's one word, .com. And I've got links from there. You can buy the book. It's on Amazon. It's in your bookstores, Barnes & Noble, your independent bookstores. You can get it on your Kindle, on your Nook. The website you can link to. There's a Facebook fan page for the website. My Twitter feed are all on there. I've got a blog. In addition, there's the reading group questions. I love talking to I'm based in Atlanta and happy to meet in person with book clubs in Atlanta, but also over Skype. I'll be more than happy to meet with a book club over Skype.
I love
tons
that.
Of, book club questions and everything. So it's right. It's a pretty rich site. Got a lot of information on there as well. And I also I write for the Huffington Post as well in their religious religion column. And so I our section. And so you'll see me pop up there every month or so. You can search for me on Huffington Post. The posts tend to generate a lot of controversy there. So I have a lot of fun with that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Sheila. I've really enjoyed it.
And I want to thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio. And don't forget, you can find us at readersentertainment.com. I will be certain to put all those links up and make sure that you can find the website and the book, and you can leave a comment if you're listening to this as a podcast. You weren't able to join us and ask questions. We certainly do check back and look for comments and questions, and we'll take care of that for you. And I'm Sheila English, your host, and happy reading.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions. www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.